period. Don't get no clearer. I'm everything bitches is scared to be. They ain't fight, it's a lot of defamation. The character see you in fucking court.
Centers. We must take extreme measures to curb the pandemic. Only essential services remain open. Gatherings are prohibited. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. These efforts aim to protect our healthcare workers, seniors, and loved ones. Let's comply with the lockdown and curfew to lower the risk of contracting COVID-19, because our health is important. For more information, visit quebec.ca/confinement. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Following is a previously broadcast program.
Welcome to Transistor Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Eve Finley. Today we're going to be listening to a recorded conversation that myself and Nora Burke had with the one and only infamous activist, Miss Major Griffin Gracie. This is a recording from a conversation that we had with her in front of a live audience back a few weeks ago as part of the Perversité Festival. Without further ado, let's jump right in.
So Ms. Major, we're going to talk a lot about your life, but just a little introduction. Ms. Major is a veteran of the historic Stonewall Rebellion, a survivor of the Attica State Prison, an elder and a community leader and a human rights activist. She's also simply mama to many in her community. Her personal story and activism for transgender civil rights intersects LGBT struggles for justice and equality from the 1960s to today. And at the center of her activism is her fierce advocacy for her girls. Trans women of color who survived police brutality and incarceration in men's jails and prisons. Could we please give a warm welcome to you?
Thank you.
How you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Okay. You're hanging in there.
Yeah, okay.
How are you enjoying Montreal? Have you been to Montreal before?
Yeah, in 1962.
Uh-huh.
It's not the same city.
It's not the same.
No.
So we're really happy to have you here. There's lots of parts of your life that are interesting to talk about, but I thought that we would start with what you're doing now. So the House of Gigi.
In Little Rock.
In Little Rock. Okay. Can you talk about what that place is, what it means to you, and how you've come to do that work?
What the House of Gigi is I moved from California to Little Rock, Arkansas after going there and being a part of the documentary that is out about me. And while I was down there, they had a little gathering for people who saw it at a little cafe. And being an ex-prisoner, I don't like being around crowds. I don't like my back being exposed to people because I'm always worried that somebody's going to come up and clock me upside my head with a bat or something, because as a trans person, that is the reality of my daily existence. And so while I was there, I went to this cafe with them and sat in the middle of this restaurant, had a cup of tea and talked to some people. And when I got to my hotel, I asked myself, what is my fucking problem? Why was I sitting in the middle of this restaurant, you know? Because for years, never, that's not something that I would ordinarily do. So I just said, okay, it's just one of those things, no big deal. The next morning, they took me to breakfast, and I did the same damn thing in another restaurant. So when I got to California, I was talking about it with some friends and stuff, and thought, you know, there's something really special about Little Rock for me to do this subconsciously. It wasn't a planned thing. I didn't think about it, because if I thought about it, I'd have been at the back, with my back against the wall, people in front of me, so no one can approach me from behind. And I thought, well, okay, well, whatever it is, the powers that be, whatever the aura is for there, it obviously affected how I behaved while I was there. Hmm. So I told myself I would go back stay for a week or so, find out what the city's like, meet some people there, because I didn't know a damn person there. And my son was talking to me on the phone and said, well, that's nice, but when have you ever tested the waters before you leaped off the bridge? So I thought, okay, so this is a new leap. And told myself, okay, well, don't fit in the car, can stay. And I moved there. So I was there, and I was living back there in 2 months. And so now that I'm there, the thing is I have grown to appreciate the South because of friends that I've known through the years that lived in the South and would go to San Francisco or New York to help with their transition, to get a chance to live the lifestyle that they wanted to live, to be away from family and friends who abused and criticized and talked about them vehemently, to be somewhere where they felt as if they could be a part of a larger community. Well, since I'm living down there, I thought, well, that's a really nice thing, but why should they have to leave the South to go to San Francisco or New York? You know, why can't they get what they need at a place where they have were raised and enjoy being? And one of the odd things about the States is that the South has this connotation of being this just horrible-ass place where people are fucking their cousins and all this other shit's going on. And it dawned on me, you know, people are fucking their cousins everywhere. It ain't just in the South, you know? And so the girls should get an opportunity to stay where they're comfortable, where they were raised. And an odd thing is that a lot of the girls who I've known through the years that were from the South always had one or two family members who didn't hate and abhor them, who they could call once a year around Christmas, Thanksgiving, you know, to make that human connection to their blood family. And so I feel as if those kind of things matter, you know, because we're all a part of one another. And if we have an opportunity to stay connected to at least one person like that, it gives us the strength to forego all the bullshit that's coming at us from everybody else. And so I decided to start an agency down there in order to help to provide that and make it better and change the system from what it's doing right now to making it better and more comfortable so that the girls that live there can be there, you know. And if they need to go to New York or San Francisco, fine, go. But at least you'll always have the option of coming back to your home base. And so I'm working on making sure that that kind of thing can happen. And through that, train other girls and stuff. We have retreats that we're working on starting to train the community to realize that, you know, we have to fight for ourselves. It's not over. You know, I would have loved to think that Stonewall corrected it, and in 2018, we can get a job, go to college, make fair pay, have a family, do our thing, cruise boys, and not get ridiculed, you know. But it hasn't. You know, it might as well have not happened in 1969. But what good has it done us today? You know, these fags running around here celebrating, ooh, gay pride. They don't really understand what pride is all about. And they're definitely taking it from gay pride to, you're supposed to be proud of what you do and the people around you. This isn't a personal thing. This isn't something that you want to take and make me. Well, what white guy doesn't take the world and go me? Whether they're a fag or straight, you know, doesn't matter. And I'm sorry if the fag, that word bothers people. I don't give a shit. They put my community through too much crap for me to give a damn about calling them a fag. You know? So we'll see tomorrow how they handle that. But that's what House of GGs is for, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Amazing. So I just wanted to ask a follow-up question. But also, yes. It's just a real pleasure. Like, I had the opportunity to spend a bit of time with you yesterday, and it's really nice to have you here in Montreal. So
thank you.
Thanks for honoring us with your time.
That's fine.
So I just wanted to ask kind of a follow-up question about the work that you're doing now, but I think the work that you've always done about building up your own community. And so, there's this reality of this upswing of visibility of trans women, including many Black trans women such as yourself, Janet Mock, Laverne Cox, but this visibility has rarely translated into significant power. And that goes for within the movements that people in this room are involved in as well. And so you do a lot of educational work outside of your community. You come to events like Pride here in Montreal.
but you're invested in building women up in your own community, supporting their development of their own leadership
yes.
and power. So the first part I wanted to ask is if you could just talk a bit more about the importance of building and sustaining leadership.
Well, the thing about leadership is you're not leading anybody. It's like that phrase of taking a horse to water and you can't make them drink. That's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do is to give my community a chance to realize that they don't have to continue to accept this bullshit that's getting shoved on us by society, by the government, by people who don't approve of us, you know, because everybody doesn't hate us. The whole out of the world of people, everybody doesn't hate who we are, that we exist, and we're not all going to hell because we're some sort of abomination according to the Bible. I want them to, the community, to look and realize who they are, to be proud of themselves, to stand up on their own 2 feet, and to let people know, no, I'm not going to do that, and you can't just do this shit to me. And so there's a way that you have to learn to negotiate through this society, because there's more of them than there is us, you know. And so I don't want them to wash over us like a tidal wave does sand on a beach, you know. I want us to be there and to be able to stand up for our rights, for them to appreciate that we're human beings, and to realize that, you know, yes, I have a brain underneath this wig, I have a heart underneath this bra, and I'm a human fucking being. You know, and you can't just do this to me because you don't like the clothes I happen to be wearing. Now, how I pee, that's my business. If I stand as shit, that's on me. Now, if you're that curious, come in there with me and you can shake me dry. You know? We don't need this crap from the rest of the world, you know. And so I want to train the community to be able to understand that stuff. And like I'm always telling the girls, you know, that we need to realize that a lot of crap is going on in this world and in both countries, the states and here, and that when the dust settles from all this bullshit that's happening, I want my community to stand up and say, I'm still fucking here, and I ain't going no goddamn where. Not running back in the closet, I'm not going to hide, and I'm not going to deny who I am because you can't take the truth. So.
And I want to come back to that also later. But, you know, watching your documentary and reading about your life, you, to me, and I think many people are revolutionary in terms of the spirit of your work and the ways and the vision that you have that is all encompassing. The kinds of work that you have done have spanned so many different movements. From harm reduction and HIV-related work that you've been that you've done in the past in the Tenderloin, doing outreach to sex workers, to being involved in prison abolition movement, and being a real leader and an incredibly important voice, not just in the United States but internationally here in Canada as well. You're well known for that work that you have done. And but I'm wondering about alliance building and the role of people here in the room who might not be trans women or in the communities that you're working with, but are still seeking to find ways to leverage support that moves beyond the token visibility and the marginal participation, the bus tokens at the end of the day, for example, or you know the glossy pictures, but. What can other organizations do to participate in building those alliances and building that power to support communities who are most directly impacted?
Okay, well, for these organizations, as you all probably know, a lot of them talk a really good game. Oh, yeah, we do transgender services, and oh, yeah, we want to take care of that community. And they wouldn't know a transgender man or woman if it walked in there and spit on them, because they haven't got a clue of who we are. They don't know who we are. They're not curious enough to find out about us. And then they have the audacity to only be interested in or notice the girls that are supposedly more passable than the rest of us, you know, the Laverne Coxes and the Janet Moggs. Well, I'm sorry, all of us are not going to be fucking pretty, and all of us are not going to be smart and have money behind us to get shit done. And it isn't just the black girls, it's white girls, Asian girls, Indian girls, all of us, you know. Just being trans is enough of a problem. Don't add color to this shit. And so the thing to do is to find people who believe in who we are as a community. Work with people who want things to be better for not just us, but everybody. If this world would get their head off their ass and appreciate us for the talents and the skills and the abilities that we have and have to hide because they can't take who it's coming from. You know, these agencies need to be held to task. And only you all can do that, you know? If they're not servicing the community like they should, call them out about it. You know, find out who their funders are and let them know. They don't deserve this money because they're not taking care of the people that they're claiming to be taking care of. And if it's you, step up to the plate. Bitch, it's me. I've been there. They told me no. Fuck them, you know? So we have to work together. You have to work intersectionally with people who aren't of your ilk, who are not of your age, size, demeanor, ethnicity, you know? But they think about things like you do. They care about stuff like you do. And so we have to learn to not get caught up in this box of, oh, whites over here, blacks over there. How about people together for whatever? And so you can do that. And so my thing is to get to these places, call them out about the bullshit that they're doing, and get them to wake up. Ta-da.
Wake up. I wonder if we can talk about another organization where you did a lot of work with the community and it was a large focus for a large part of your life, the TGIJP.
Oh, yeah.
The Transgender, Gender Variant, Intersex Justice Project. First, can you just talk about what TGIJP does and a little bit about its history, how it came to be?
TGIJP came to be with Alex Lee and myself. Alex was a studying lawyer at the time. And he was in school, and he was noticing the complete increase in incarceration for the trans girls who were working in San Francisco. And so when he got his law degree, he started an agency called TIP, Transgendered in Prison. And from there, it turned into the Transgender, Gender Variant, and Intersex Justice Project. And what we got to do was we got to connect with the girls in the prison system, not just the jails, but the prison. And in doing that, having them have some place and someone to write to and talk about the harassing, horrible things that were happening to them in there on a daily basis. Because they had nobody to go to, no one to listen to them. They're not in touch with their families, and nobody really cared in the system itself to make things better. And so what we wound up doing is we started a letter writing program. And then since Alex was a lawyer, we got an opportunity to go in there and visit them and talk to them and have them get a chance to verbally tell somebody about the things that they were going through and suffering and help to give them some kind of solution, not so much to alleviate it and make it better. You know, I may be old, but I'm not, I don't have no wand. I can't bingo, Sally, you ready to go. But I can talk to them. I can give them a sense of wherewithal and appreciate who they are as they are and know that they're loved no matter what they have to do. They don't have to jump through hoops, be tall, be passive, be on hormones. All they have to do is be breathing and be a trans person. You know, and so through him and doing that, we got an opportunity to get the letter writing program done. He would go to court with some of the girls who weren't doing prison time yet and fight for them in court. And we got a chance to talk to some judges and send in letters stating that, you know, this person doesn't need to be in jail. Maybe they need rehab, you know, because a lot of people think that, oh yeah, if you're a transgender woman, the only thing you can do is hook. And then if you're hooking, well, of course you do drugs. And if you do drugs, well, of course you're not trustworthy. Oh, and then of course you're a thief, and it's a matter of time before you're going to kill somebody because you haven't got enough sense to survive without going through that path. Bullshit. You know, and so the thing is that we got an opportunity to help to clarify some of that. And the sad thing is that as much as we've done as far as that goes, it hasn't gone anywhere. You know, it persists today still, you know, and we're still writing to folks. We're now trying to, what they're doing in San Francisco now is trying to create a safe space to hire the transgender women to come out of prison so that they can make a fair wage and earn for themselves so that they can be independent, stand on their own two feet, have some sense of pride in who they are. Now, if they want to still hook, fine. I'm going to tell you how to hook safely, you know, so that you don't have to go to prayer. You're not going to get a disease. You're not going to wind up dead, beat against the curb, because you're going to check out your John. Someone's going to know who you're with, and you're going to do it safely. You know, it's an opportunity to give the community a chance to do what they want to do for themselves. You know, a lot of agencies come in and want to try to help. It's like, oh, we have a truckload with 20,000 shoes. Well, that's nice, child. I don't need shoes. I need a sweater. No, we have shoes. I need a fucking sweater. So listen to the community. You know, do what they ask. You know, you need sweaters? Get them goddamn sweaters. A shoe ain't going to keep you warm, you know. So for me, it's a matter of making sure that, you know, all of you have a sense of who you are and who you want to be. And you should be able to express that freely any way you choose. It's not just how you dress. It's what your aura is, how you feel, the sense of pride you have when you're walking somewhere. You know, I want the community to feel every day like they're kicking it on 8 goddamn cylinders and people can kiss my motherfucking ass as I take care of my goddamn business.
Amazing. when we were brainstorming questions, we were interested in this thing about, you've done a lot of organizing in different structures, like in an NGO or a nonprofit, but also just a group of people doing something out of need. And we wonder what the differences of doing organizing in those two structures is. What do you gain or what do you lose by doing this kind of radical community organizing in the structure of like a not-for-profit versus in a grassroots organization, a grassroots group of people?
Well, you know, I don't feel I lose anything. What I gain is spreading of knowledge, confidence, information, because you can't just run out there and don't have any idea where you're going. It's like you don't leave your house going, oh God, where am I going today? There has to be some kind of plan. And the thing is that, you know, in working with organizations who are just starting and trying to figure out what to do to help the community, I want to give them the information that they need to structure their grassroots stuff to get to the people that they're trying to serve, and not the people who are behind them in their corner, like their friends and things like that. Because a lot of things get carried away with, have really good intentions, but you don't have good follow through. So if I can help teach them how to follow it through and to be the best at what it is they're trying to do, then I want to do that. One of the things by working with non-governmental organizations, stuff like that, is I wound up going to Switzerland and speaking at the United Nations. And it was the first time they'd even accepted hearing the word transgender. But after talking with me for a while, when they gave their judgment over all the organizations, when there were 12 of us, in their speech back to us, they let me know that in their point of view, the United States is creating harm by holding somebody in the hold or segregated unit for more than 15 days as a form of torture. Well, my community has been in the hold for like, this girl just got out of prison. She's in the hold for 26 years, you know. So what, you know, what do we do to help correct that? Well, you have to work with other people to try to get that thing done and changed and give them the strength to do it, along with the information.
When did you do that UN talk?
Oh, goodness. I can't even remember a year. 2005.
Okay, interesting.
2005.
So a few years ago in 2015, you also officially passed the torch to Janetta Johnson, who took over leadership of TGIJP. What was it like for you to take a step back from that organization you've been involved with for so long?
I called myself going to take a break.
Yeah.
I couldn't take a damn break. I moved to Little Rock and started another organization. I've been running around since then. Like, shit, what's my fucking problem? These motherfuckers are fine without me. And here I sit.
Do you want to?
Sure.
So I was talking to one of the Pride organizers yesterday at the event about how it came to be that you were invited.
Cool.
And I guess I can share this.
I don't know, so tell me.
So I'll tell you. but also no disrespect to that's you and you being here, but apparently loosely goes that they're like, we need somebody older that we can honor as a grand marshal.
Oh, really? Okay.
And thankfully somebody knew a few, right? And okay. So they're like, we don't know who that is.
Okay.
Eventually people came around and figured out that it would be a smart idea to invite you. But what it made me think about was, you know, and you've commented on this, I think, in the movie, too, you're like, I would like some company, some other people who've been through this, who have lived as long as I have. And so I think that, it highlighted a couple of things for me. Like, A, it's real that there is a lack of elders in our community. And when we talk about elders, often that ends up meaning somebody who's made it to their 40s or maybe their 50s, mm-hmm. right? And then I was also thinking about how it's sad that we don't know who the elders are here in Montreal, that an organization like Pride wouldn't think of somebody like Farah Abdil, wouldn't think of Mira Saleh Ross, wouldn't think of Michelle DeVille, Jackie Rev, Diane Gobet. Mm-hmm. And these are trans women and transvestites who were trailblazers in the 80s and 90s in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And they're a bit younger there, and they're late 40s, 50s, 60s for the most part. But they were central in the response to earlier waves of the AIDS epidemic here in Montreal. They were founders of important sex worker and drug user organizations in Montreal and Toronto. And they've been vital voices in challenging police violence and negligence, and yet they've been really relegated to the shadows. Like, I don't think most people at Pride would know their names.
Yeah.
And they still live in and around Montreal, and even what little recognition they do receive is often for their legacy, with little attention to their material conditions today. And that resonated also with something that comes out in your movie in terms of, you know, great, you've done all this amazing work, been organizing, supporting so many other people, but you need a fucking house over your head. You need to be cared for as well. And so I want to ask just a bit about your own reflections. What work needs to be done to strengthen intergenerational connections, to ensure that our elders are given the support and care that they deserve, and to also create opportunities for younger generations to be able to be a part of community mm-hmm. with older generations who have crucial lessons to share, insights, wisdom.
Yeah. Okay, the interesting thing about that whole thing is they have the audacity to call somebody an elder at 40 or 50 years old. Those people do not want to be called elders at 40 years old. I'm sorry, when I was 40, I was still wearing 3-inch heels and showing my beautiful ass every chance I got and needed to get laid on a regular basis. I did not have time to be called a goddamn elder, you know what I mean? And so they do this because they have scared everybody else who is an elder person into the shadows, you know what I mean? And it becomes a thing of you're going to go in and just hide and be quiet and don't say anything because you don't want to upset the apple cart. You don't want to bring more attention to you than you can handle, you know, because as trans people, we suffer a lot from the moment we realize who we are. You know, we get raised with people telling you as your first part, oh, don't follow the crowd, be your own person, live your own life, we're so proud of you. You finally start doing that, and the first question out their mouth is, well, why can't you be like everybody else? Why can't you just follow the crowd? You know, why can't you be like your sister? Oh, fuck her, you know what I mean? And so it becomes a matter of how do you negotiate through this and maintain and be who you need to be for you. You know, because we can't live our lives for our friends or our parents, you know. We're in this skin. We have to do this. You know, and for me to be, you know, 77 years old, I feel I do good to get up my ass and walk from my bed to the bathroom. Because there are days my body does not want to do anything. And I can handle being an elder because I'm over 60. Got it. You know what I mean? But that doesn't mean I still don't want to get laid. I cruise rent men. I chase all the guys that I can possibly have. And that just because there's gray up here don't mean the fire is not kicking down there. The bitch is hot. And it's a matter of giving people the sense of respect to be who they need to be. And in getting it to mingle between older and younger people, younger people need to realize whose shoulders that they're standing on. That things haven't, you know, they have the audacity to think, oh, it's always been like this. I'm applying for a job, I'm working at McDonald's or whatever. Bitch, it wasn't always like that. My generation, we couldn't come out and the sun be shining. We would get attacked before we got down the bottom of the stairs, you know what I mean? And so there needs to be an appreciation on both sides. A lot of the older people that I have gotten to know, a lot of friends of mine, don't want to deal with younger people. Oh, they're too ignorant, they're too slow, they're too stupid, they don't want to think, they don't really care. Well, then teach them, work with them, talk to them. You know, like all these new terminologies for partners and cis people and, but was it banana something? And you know what? Fuck all that shit. You know, these are people, talk to them. It's like you can, everybody here, I'm sure, has a cell phone, oh God, and text this other people. What happened to calling somebody? What happened to hearing a friend's voice? Because you can't tell from a text how your friend is doing. I'm at so-and-so's shopping. How are you? You know, is something wrong? How are you feeling? You can only find out by talking to them, hearing their voice, because you know them. And so this new technology has increased this, I don't know, shield around younger people and prevented older people from being able to break through that. You know, I raised 6 sons, and when my sons text me, I go, oh, how wonderful. He's alive. Let me call his ass. He does not answer the phone. And then he'll text me back, is something wrong? Why are you calling? Because I want to talk to you, bitch. I don't understand what the problem is. Call me back. Then I'll call back. And so it's a generational thing, you know. And there has to be a way by getting younger people to understand and appreciate older people and help them get the older people to understand and appreciate young people, you know. And it's a difficult thing to do because it's like trying to mix oil and water, you know. But you can shake it up and get it to work for a little bit, but you gotta keep trying. You know, you can't let it chase you away or say, oh no, this is too hard, I don't wanna do this and stuff. And as far as why they brought me here, I had no idea why they called me. It's like they should have brought my ass here for the trans parade. I'm down. I don't appreciate this gay pride stuff because I'm so sick of white, middle class fags and them adopting Asian and black children. Really, what the hell is that about? How's this child gonna realize what its heritage is? How it fits into the rest of the world? Because it's not going to fit in like the parents that raised him are fitting in, you know? And so where does that knowledge come from? Who's going to be there to explain that to that child? And I've had friends who I know who have done that tell me, well, we have black friends. Oh, yeah, that's helpful. And how often do you see them? I don't see them going to the club with you because your club don't let black people in there, you know, chase you out, you know? So it's a difficult thing. And as far as the pride thing here, good. I'm a token black, old, bitter bitch. Good. And I'm going to tell them about it tomorrow.
Yeah, you will tell them. You were speaking about it just a little bit, but it seems like family is very important to you. In many different forms too. So I'm curious, what family does mean to you and how maybe that's changed for you over time, over your lifetime.
Well, it hasn't changed, it's just grown exponentially. Right. And it's family of your making. Mm-hmm. It's family that you choose. We don't get to choose who our parents are. You know, that's some other motherfucker that, oh, let me throw that bitch over here and stuff. So we don't have any control over that. If you're lucky, you get a good set. If you're not, you just get what you got, deal with it till you can get away and do something else. And when you get away, you create a family for you. You know, as human beings, we are tied to this need of another person. Not a lover, you know, a friend is good. You know, you can find a good dog, you know what I mean? But someone who loves you unconditionally, who can handle your faults as well as your good points. Someone who isn't going to criticize you you know, for stuff that you believe that you can do, and believe in you, and foster you, and give you the care and concern to move forward. You know, and so the family that all of you here have created through your lives as the adult people that you are, those are the things that you should nurture and hold on to and caress and help grow and continue to be a part of. Because without those, what are you living for? You know, yeah, things are rough and things are hard and we definitely suffer. But you don't have to suffer in pain. You know, there's always going to be something to laugh at. Keep a sense of humor. Keep your wits about you and keep yourself safe. You know, and you can do that with people who are around you that love you and care about you. And that there's all kinds of and forms of love. There's all kinds of things that can help to caress your personality, to give you the strength to move forward, to stand up and be fucking counted, you know, to find someone or something that's going to help you grow to be a better person. You don't want to be tomorrow the same person you were today. You want something to have happened to you during your day to make you go, ooh, I got to remember that. That's another goddamn memory. And as you get older, you'll find that those memories can turn out to be the most comfortable thing in your very existence. Because it's a feeling and an emotion that you've had that you can bring back up. One of the reasons I still go around and see my documentary every time I get invited is because one of the things that happens when I watch that is all of the years that I've been living, different parts of that is in this documentary. For me, I'll know where a certain phrase came from because I remember the person that I first thought that phrase to. And I'll feel warm inside and I'll miss them and hope that wherever they are, in whatever part of the sky or ground, that they know, oh, Major thought about me. That was so sweet, you know? And I get that when I call people and talk to them on the phone. I'm like, what? You calling me? Oh, God. So nice. That's so weird. Yeah, well, hi. So create those things and embrace them and hold on to them, you know, because things happen, people change, folks move away, you know, and you don't want their going away to be this wall that you've run into. You want to wish them well, hope that they prosper, and hope that they're okay, and that the thought of them gives you a sense of comfort and joy and style.
And style. Since you mentioned, why don't we talk about your documentary for a little bit? Yeah, if you want to. I'm kind of curious, like, you said some comments about watching it reminds you about parts of your life. Like, sitting down, I'm sure you've seen it a million times.
I just saw it last night.
You just saw it last night. Are you happy with the final product? Do you think it represents who you are and who you come from?
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
The lady and guy who did that, they did a damn good job. Mm-hmm. Just having them around and do this, it was never an inconvenience. They were never in the way. I didn't have to live my life and have them intrude upon it. They were part of things as it flowed. It was 2.5 years in the making. And it wasn't an obnoxious or strenuous thing. It was really an interesting process. In hair, out of hair, you know. It didn't matter to me, I don't give a shit, you know. It's my hair, I bought it, fuck it. So, but it's a comfortable thing because one of the things that you get from it is it's not this compilation of what people think I am. Mm-hmm. It's me with people around me who care about me and who are interested in making this for the girls that are coming up behind me, you know, which is why I did it, so that my community would realize, you know, we can get to be older people. We don't all have to die by 35, you know, which is up from 26 when I was growing up. You know, I was like, oh, 35, yay. But it's a thing to get you to realize that it's not just about me and what I do and who I am. It's me and connections to the people around me, to folks like you all, you know, who I know, I may know later or come back next year and see again, you know, and like Nora and stuff like that, you know. So it's a family thing. It's a thing encompassing what things happened to get me to who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a good thing. She saw her with me.
Yeah. maybe a question related to the movie also, but
sure.
you were talking about different phrases in the movie, and one of the most powerful moments is when a whole chorus of trans women come on the screen and all recite the "we're still here, we're still fucking here." And, you know, I think it speaks to that collective spirit also.
Yes.
It's not just "I'm here," but "we're here." And I think it speaks about survival to me within a lifetime, across kind of collectivity, across generations as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you could reflect a little bit about that. And part of why I want to ask you to do that is just even over the past couple of weeks and over the years, I've seen so many friends, comrades, mostly young trans women really struggle, and often they're leaders in their own communities. They're some of the most visible activists who are leading the cause at the moment, and on the inside are really struggling to still stay here. And you have been, and I think part of it is also there's a lack of a sense of longevity, and being able to watch all the different kinds of work that you've done over the years and that you've sustained that work. I think that's something that we can all often lose perspective of when we're in our own crises and when we're in movements or organizing work that is oriented around these very pressing issues. And so that spirit of "we're still here," I think, is so important and so strong throughout your work. So I was just wondering if you could reflect on that. Like, I've heard you just spending time with you even last night talk about the importance of self-care and of remembering to take time for yourself, but also just wondering what that looks like for all of us in this room who maybe don't have the appreciation of that longevity, that it's a long haul.
Well, you know, it's not just for activism, it's for living your lives. I mean, the pressures of just being a black person is annoying without me even being trans. So it's like, well, shit, on top of all that, I got to put up with this crap. And then, oh, God, I have a dick and I'm still a woman. Okay, explain womanhood to me. And so it becomes a matter of realizing who you are. And no matter what work you do or what life you have to live, you've got to learn to take care of yourself first. You can't be a good activist or a good person without some modicum of self-care. The only reason I've been able to do this these 50 fucking years is because when things got weird, I stepped back, got my shit together, and then moved forward. And you have to realize that, first of all, if you're going to be an activist or you care about the community, you can't save everybody. You can only save the people who want to be saved, you know. And then you have to realize that they were getting along before you came along, and after your ass falls apart, has a mental breakdown, collapses in a corner and dies, they're going to still get along and go, oh, I remember her poor thing, hope she's okay, and keep on going. So you have to take care of you first. You have to remember that you are not irreplaceable. You've got to take care of you so you can keep going. If you've fallen apart and having a nervous breakdown and worried about something that someone else is doing in their life that you're trying to correct, and you're not taking care of you, you get sick. You can't do that. You know, if something happens to you where you are stuck in a situation and can't figure your way out, then step back from it. Don't let the stress of this world and people around you push you into corners or walls that you can't get out of. You know, for me, it's like I want people to live a life like I did after I came out of prison. Put your back against the wall, don't let no motherfucker sneak up on you, and take care of the shit that's in front of you as you can. When you can't, let it go. And come back to it. Because if you don't take care of it, and it does take you too much, then you're, what good of you? Who have you served? And then do you come back from those kind of things? I've had friends who lost their cookies over stuff. When AIDS became popular, one of the things that was amazing in the beginning is that the medicines that they had these guys and my girls on was like a bag of M&M candies. So you push them into all the different little colors, and then you throw in some of the ones that have nuts in them, and then you go, these you take with water, these you take with juice, these you take every 3 hours, these you take with something else, these you don't take anything, these you have to have not eaten for 4 hours. And then you put them all back in the bag and tell you, okay, here, now go out and take care of yourself. That's a lot to remember to do. And so people weren't getting a chance to follow the regimen. And what wound up happening, the social workers who were trying to get them to do this, some medicine, some pills had to be cold, other pills had to be room temperature. And so you wound up being frustrated because you can't help in the work that you do but liking somebody and really wanting them to do well and step out of the milieu that they're in and do better. And so you really strive hard to do that. And then, you know, people have mental issues. They have things that they have to think about for themselves, and so they don't do it. And so my friend drove herself crazy hunting down this one guy who she wanted to make sure he took his pills and stuff like that. She wound up going completely nuts on me and never got back from it, you know. And so there are things that you need to think about within yourself as you're starting to do this care for other people, you know, and realize what your limits are, what your strengths and weaknesses are. Because you can push yourself past your own breaking point and you can't get back, you know? So for me, I want you to take care of yourselves, be the best you can be, and then turn around and the bitch just behind you. Come here, baby, give me a hand, and you have to stand up, you know? And you may get a thank you and you may not. That's not what you're doing it for. I'm not doing this to be rich. Oh, shit, I do good, get a good meal, not to mention buy a right boy. So, but, you know, take care of you, enjoy yourselves and your lives, you know, and do what you need to do to stay better, be better, and act better.
Nice. Okay. It's beautiful. We only have time for probably, like, one more question before we move on to a Q&A portion. I wonder if you want to just continue talking about, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, with all of your experience and time and work over the years, mm-hmm. what do you know now that you would tell a younger version of yourself or like a young activist today? What advice would you give
them? Okay, I told myself, bitch, don't go there. Oh, God. You know, I think what I would tell younger people is, you have to not believe the things that the government or people tell you because the hype and the whitewashing over stuff that goes on in most of these countries in the world is so crap-filled that you can't get around it, you know. And to investigate things, check out, you know, what's the story that they're not telling you. I mean, television as some kind of thing now where they're doing these series on the 60s and 70s and 80s, and I have a real hard time watching those because what they're showing me, I remember seeing on the news at that time, but they're not giving you the flavor of the country at that time, what the people's perception is that were there at that time, how I thought at that time over stuff. And so there's this thing of presenting to people what they feel people want to see, mm-hmm. instead of presenting what it is and letting us come to our own conclusion. You know, we're not a bunch of idiots. We know what the hell is going on. You know what I mean? So just show me, and I'll decide if I like it or not, if I'm going to accept it or not, and take it from there. You know. And so my thing is, and going through that kind of thing, when you hear all this crap, take what makes sense to you and think about it later. The rest of that shit, leave it the fuck alone. It's, oh God, where's the garbage can? I don't have time for this, you know. Because you're gonna hear a bunch of stuff like Stonewall. God, I heard about this movie and, oh God, some white boy from Iowa. Mm-hmm. That child was so white he glowed in the daytime. That's not good. There was nobody there that I knew, so. But that's the proposition that's out there. And that's the thing that these fads still hold on to. Mm-hmm. Forgetting that, you know, they're standing on the shoulders of trans women and trans men and gender nonconforming folks and running around acting as if, oh, they don't exist. Bitch, not only do I exist, but I'm the reason your ass is here dancing around like this, so. that's what we have to let them know.
Yeah.
And I will tomorrow, Jessica.
Yes.
Cannot wait. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. So we do still have like a little bit of time for questions. If anyone wants to ask a question, just raise your hand and we can give you a microphone, or you can ask your question from where you are. Does anyone at this point have any questions?
Oh, good. Smart motherfuckers. Let's go.
Yeah, on over here.
What would you take, or like, sorry for my English.
That's okay.
So if you see, like, the Stonewall Riots as like a big event,
mm-hmm.
what would you point out as a really, trailblazing?
Yeah.
Like a course changing, like for the LGBTQ event that you admire mm-hmm. since then.
Well, first of all, it's TGLBQ. We'll start off there. Okay. The fact that they don't realize that T should be first, I don't know what their fucking problem is. But anyway, the thing is that, you know, I can't think of anything that would have happened to have changed that or made it better or had it be okay today, 45 or 100 years later, you know. But it's what it was. I wouldn't so much call it a riot as it was a fight for survival. You know, my community had been suffering through the police harassment, and that at that time in the 60s, all gay bars were subject to that. The police would just go and take their nightsticks and knock on the door jam, and the lights would come on, and everybody knew to file out. And they were doing that, the police were doing that, in order to check people's IDs, to catch minors in the clubs, so they could shut the clubs down. You know, and so knowing this, you know, you always make sure that if that kind of thing happened, if you happen to know somebody who was in there was a minor, you helped figure out a way to get them out of there without having to go out the front door. But it would be nice if there was something that I could think of that would have made it better or changed the situation the way that it went. But it went askew, and as typical white guys do, child, they took it from the people that did most of the work. You know? And so, you know, eventually they're going to get it. All of them aren't monsters, you know. I have some really good gay friends and stuff like that. And I also have some friends that are fagula riddled, but you know, that's that's how it goes, you know. But thanks for the question, dear. Okay, eat time.
Who else?
I only got a question.
Do you have a question for them?
Oh God, let me see.
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to hear from the beginning of the conversation. Maybe you talked about it. Like, just okay. If it's inappropriate, so just tell me. Okay. Like we heard like so many different stories of what actually what started the riots at that night.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a riddle for me that I would really love to hear. If it's like if something like a specific trigger of that night or like maybe of the era, I don't know.
Okay, well let me tell you like this. I'm 77 and I don't fucking remember what started shit back I've heard a lot of stuff too. Like I've heard someone threw a brick through the window mm-hmm. of the bar. I've heard somebody smashed something. There's a park across the street that something crashed or whatever have you. I don't know what the fuck happened. All I knew was I was fighting and I got knocked out and dragged into the paddy wagon, and that's it. So pick whatever one that you like and believe that one. Or since create one.
The Dorothy actress one is like.
There you go. Yeah, let's go, God. They didn't even try to blame Judy Garland. Please, that bitch died. I don't get it.
Yeah, I have a question. Should we use this mic?
Sure.
So I was thinking that, like Nora said, you know, like the trans elders that I know are 20, 30 years older than me, and that's pretty young,
mm-hmm.
and people just disappear and step out of the scene. And also, what do we need to do in order to, you know, keep contact, and what do we make our communities maybe less hostile? Because I feel often the language changes all the time, and we come up with new words, mm-hmm. new self-identities, and older people, or like, you know, people that like fought for our rights earlier on are just alienated by it. And how do we make it a kinder space, a gentler space for everyone? And also I want to know about House of Gigi, and how is it working? What is it? What can we do to help? Yeah, can you tell us about why did you choose to move in the South and exit the Bay?
For my girls from the South that I knew. And if you're interested in House of Gigi's, it's House of two G's, not G-I-G-I. That's typical bullshit. 2G's dot org. And they'll give you all the information that you need. And, you know, the thing to keep in mind is if you're going to really want work and to do it, because we've been beaten, badgered, annoyed, pushed, tried to deal with some younger people before, got red, put in our place, can't go out in public because they run over you. I have had people walking, I have a scooter because I have a problem walking around in the city, and people walk into my scooter to show you how much attention they are not paying on their goddamn cell phone texting. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, thank God it doesn't have gas so I can run over them. You know, but it's a matter of giving and making the connections to them and going to where they are and being prepared for the, no, we don't want to be fucking bothered, but remaining persistent. Keep going, you know, until you get through that wall, because we have to protect ourselves, you know. The fact that we're older doesn't mean that we're any tougher than anybody else, you know, or that we're wiser than the rest of the world. We're just people, and that connection has to be done with some sense of safety and sense of regard for who the person is that you're attempting to get to know better, you know. And you need to realize, too, that when AIDS came here, people were afraid to make friends because you could meet somebody on Monday and they'd be dead by Thursday. You know, so all of a sudden, people weren't going to the bars, folks weren't meeting, you know, other folks and stuff. And so it was a really rough time. And for the us at that time being younger, that's the kind of thing that our parents went through, that I would have gone through if I'd have had a straight life as a 70-year-old person. My friends would be dying around me, you know. But because of my lifestyle, who I am, my friends are already dead. And so I don't have them here with me now. The closest people I have to me now that are my, they're my daughters to me, you know. And the oldest one of them is 55, you know, so. But if that's what you want to do, please pursue it, you know. And you'll have to work with them and teach them what the new words are and what the vernacular is and stuff like that. I have some kids who are trying to get me to grasp it too, and I'm sorry, I don't have time for that. You know, give me a leg or an arm, I can grab that, but I don't have time. Okay?
He loves me so, I know, yeah. Your love a flow like a fountain. Mount a blessing with him, give me can't count them. I saw me not turn my back, punch and me stand firm like a mountain. So me say, yeah, Jah, you make me feel so right. Higher than high. Your love I just can't deny. Never scared, 'cause you make me feel so right.